Hey, what's up, folks? Welcome to the Tuesday night live stream here on Owen, Texas Football. I'm Lifetime Longhorn Rod Babers, joined by fellow Lifetime Longhorn CJ Vogel and, of course, Bobby Burton, the man, the myth, the legend himself. All questions, please throw them out there. We'll answer as many of the questions as we can on the day. We have some recruiting updates to get to in the recruiting world. Of course, we also will talk about the guys being back on campus, get into some Texas football, talk about the schedule a little bit. I got a couple of questions for the panel here tonight as well. So we'll get into as many of the questions as we can from you guys. Remember, super chats, of course, always jump to the front of the line. You can interrupt the show at any time. You know how that goes. Thank you guys for joining us. Appreciate all the love and the participation in the show. Gentlemen, how's it going this evening? How you doing? What's up, CJ? How you doing, brother?
Hey, we're hanging in there. It's a beautiful day in the city of Austin. It was just that Zilker a little bit. Got some running around in. Got to see the city. You know how it is. It's a great time of the year, you know, so I'm hanging in there.
Yeah, Bobby, what about you, brother? How you feeling? Nobody's feeling as good as Texas softball right now, but we can get to that in a second. They still feel good. We'll get to that in just a second, but how you doing, brother?
I'm doing good. I've only allowed 3 hits in 3 games. No, I'm not Texas softball. Yeah, and no runs. I'm doing good to CJ's point and your point, Texas. Offered a new 2025 defensive lineman today, J.J. Haney, out of Rancho Santa Margarita Catholic out in Southern California. Defensive lineman goes about 6'4", 280, 285. Right now, I don't want to tip it off too much, but got a text from Jerry Hamilton. He is running a guy down that he thinks is going to be visiting tomorrow. That is a big-time player that is not currently out there right now. Jerry said he's going to text me. And let me go with that news once he puts it up on Texas Football First, as soon as he can confirm that news. So quite a little bit of recruiting news. It is a little bit of the quiet before the storm, Rod. They have a big recruiting weekend. I think 7 official visitors on campus this weekend. Of course, the team got back at it on Sunday afternoon, actually having a team meeting where Bert Auburn was awarded a scholarship. Then they had their first workouts yesterday. So they're back at it again, and we'll see exactly where some of these guys pan out this summer, because I'm telling you, it is a important summer for a few guys, not just guys that we know but and have seen, but young men like Sadir Mitchell, the defensive lineman who Texas needs to have a good summer prior to the fall camp. So we'll see how it goes.
Let me ask you this, and CJ, I'll start with you. Is there a particular focus that you guys are starting to see in the 2025 class from Texas perspective? Is there an emphasis, a priority in this class of 2025, in your opinion?
Yeah, I think there's 2, and I think one of them is obviously surrounded around the big wide receiver class that Texas is pursuing at the moment, whether or not it ends up being 3 potential 5 stars in this class. DeCorian Moore, Jamie French, Khalik Lockett. That's a great big headline. And for Steve Sarkisian, Chris Jackson, and the future of this Texas offense, there should be no shortage of talent at the wide receiver position. And they're making sure that they're pursuing and going after all the big dogs that are certainly attainable. And right now, going into the official visit month of June, it's going to be a big opportunity for Texas to get out in front of all 3 and maintain that lead going into the quiet dead period in July and into the season, where you'll start seeing a lot of decisions being made. And then the other one is on the defensive line, right? We've talked a lot about what Bo Davis and LSU is starting to do, whether that be Zion Williams or Brandon Brown out of Ugalde, the current Texas commit. I know Texas is trying to get a number of guys on campus this month. Obviously, coming in this weekend will be Myron Charles out of Charlotte, Florida, as well as Josiah Sharma out of Folsom, California. Well, they just offered J.J. Haney as well out of, Rancho Santa Margarita, California? Is that where it was, Bobby? That's quite an athlete. If you go watch the tape, 6'4", I mean, basketball stalker background, Rod, just started playing basketball or football 2 years ago, so still brand new. And listen to some of these offers in the last week: Alabama, Georgia, Florida, Minnesota, Oregon.
Yeah,
it's all about him just now getting on the radars of some of these college coaches, more so than Texas looking around and panicking. I want to clear that up at the defensive line spot. Sometimes guys just are late bloomers, and if you're Texas, Why would you not? You have plenty of connections to the California area. You've had success there in the past. And right now, that's a big approach for this class of 2025 at the moment. Go ahead, Bobby. Sorry about that.
Oh, no, I didn't have anything. I think that he's a German native, is my understanding. Now he's living in the U.S. and has been for a couple of years. But, you know, I agree with CJ that the wide receivers getting the lion's share of the attention and on offense. And I think on defense, the defensive tackles are. I agree with CJ in that. But, Rod, I don't see a particular position being attacked. I see a pretty overall construct right now. I would say that, and we mentioned it this morning, Texas is involved in a lot of big boy recruitments right now. Maybe more so than they're even accustomed to. Now, that doesn't mean Texas didn't fight the world for Ryan Wingo and Arch Manning and Anthony Hill and Cedric Baxter, the whole lot, right? I mean, a bunch of them. But what's happening right now, Rod, I think it's even more. Like before, it was, you know, 5 to 10 guys a cycle where they were going to try to fight the world for. Now it's more like 10 to 15. So there's not as many as what I would call layups in recruiting. You know what I mean by that? And so if I had to give you one overall feel that I have for it, it's that the ante is being upped right
now. Okay. Yeah, so I like that.
It's not a bad thing. It's just I think it's a byproduct of where Texas is as a program and where they want to go. And they've been good enough, Rod, and particularly coming off this last season, to sit in there and slug it out a little bit. You know what I mean? They have the same, you know, wherewithal to go up against the Floridas and the Georgias and the Alabamas now, right? Whereas before they might, if you're not from Texas and you're looking at Alabama, Texas is going to be behind. Now that's not so much the case. And so it's those extra little, like, you know, like I call them big boy recruitments, I think Texas is in on. And that could be an offensive line. It could be a wide receiver. It could be a defensive end. The secondary is a part of that right now, ongoing as well. So a lot of different ones. Riley Pettijohn over the linebacker. They already got Bo Barnes that was in that category as well at linebacker. So they've got a lot of those type of recruitments, Rob.
I like that because I always say that every – recruiting class ends up in a theme of some kind. Sometimes it's that a player that big, an Arch Manning or Chris Sims. You know, sometimes it's a position, you know, like the O-line or the DBs. Some of you get a lot of great players, elite players at that one position. But I like what you said about it. And it makes sense, right? Because now the sales pitch is so much easier now, right? When you were walking into those rooms before, you know, you were asking those guys to just go on faith that you were going to be able to achieve your goals and to, you know, to help them achieve theirs, obviously, and develop talent and compete for championships. Now you already have it. It's on the resume now. So the sales pitch is easier. So I'm with you. I think now maybe they do up the ante and go in with their chest out a little bit, and they believe they can you know, have the same conversation that Alabama and Georgia are having and that Ohio State's having right now, that no, we're a championship program. We got some staying power here, and we've proven it. Look at the draft. Look at last season. We just got here third year. We're going to get even better. So, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I like that. Good stuff, Bobby. All right, we'll get to some of your questions. I know you guys got a lot of them, so let's start with a couple of questions. And I have a couple of questions for the panel that we'll get to here in a second too. But Craig Johnson, I like this one because a lot of Keelan Russell talk in the chat. I see you guys. It says, who has the most upside, the more upside, Keelan Russell or KJ Lacy? Craig wants to know. CJ, I'll throw it to you.
Yeah, I guess that's really dealer's choice. I know a lot of folks are big and high on Keelan Russell. I think there's a little bit of an overemphasis on what his recruitment would mean for Duncanville. I think Texas is going to have a leg in the door there. They've had a leg in the door there for quite a while now. When you think about Alex January, Colin Simmons, Cam Williams, of course, now DeCorian Moore is kind of that guy that Texas is pushing for. I'm not sure that that's going to have as much of an emphasis or a pull on DeCorian Moore's recruitment in its entirety as some Texas fans might be putting on Keelan Russell at the moment. So besides all that, how do they kind of stack up as quarterback prospects? One, I think Keelan Russell has a great arm. I think he's a little bit raw in his mechanics. I think he's a little bit raw as a quarterback, but you see the athleticism bail him out. He's got a tremendous frame. He's got tremendous awareness and an ability to get out of sticky situations, which you adore as quarterback prospects when you're evaluating. It's very funny, actually. Both quarterbacks were throwing to arguably the two best wide receivers over the past two cycles last year. So DeCorian Moore, obviously, with Keelan Russell, and then Ryan Williams, who ended up at Alabama last year at Sarah Land. So you can't necessarily, you know, poke one or two holes in the game of those quarterbacks because they have great elite wide receivers. But I do like KJ Lacy a little bit more, just preferential. I think the way that he makes throws on the run is a little bit more advanced for me. And I think when you see him, and I saw them at the Elite 11, when they're in rhythm and they're going through those drills where they're designed to either take by the third step, get the ball out, or on the fifth step, you cut back up in front of the pocket and you get the ball out to the near pylon. Whatever the drills are designed for, I think in rhythm, he just has a little bit more consistency to his game. That's not to say, obviously, neither are talented. One's going to Alabama. One's currently pegged to go to Texas. But to my point, I think that there's just a little bit more fine-tuned right now in the throwing motions and mechanics of KJ Lacy. Who knows? Who knows how they'll both shake out? But I think I'll trust Steve Sarkisian in this one. Obviously, had the opportunity to pursue Keelan Russell and has stuck firm with the commitment of KJ Lacy, having fought off Ole Miss, Auburn, Oregon, Alabama, now potentially USC coming back around for that one as well. I'm a fan of KJ first and foremost.
I would say this, Rod, having watched them both a lot, Keelan Russell is a bigger guy, and I think he stands in really well in the pocket, okay, and will throw with traffic in his face, okay? KJ Lacy is, to CJ's point, is a much more refined product already, I think is a good way to put it, right? I mean, he's ahead of the game. The thing that I like about KJ Lacy, and one of the reasons why I compare him, frankly, to Bryce Young, is he is a little undersized. But, you know, Bryce Young did a hell of a job finding ways to move the pocket, to find lanes to throw the ball, especially in the RPO game. Rod, you know what I mean by that?
Yeah.
That's why I see a Bryce Young in KJ Lacy. Also extremely accurate, very athletic, smart player, has led his team to a couple of state championships, not unlike Keelan Russell, right? I mean, these guys are both high-end guys. Russell is – he's a Josh Allen type. And I don't get me wrong, I'm not trying to compare him to Josh Allen.
A big
– he's got a hose.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And a big arm. Not Josh Allen type arm, but he's a bigger guy. Yeah. He can run around a little bit heavier. You know what I mean? Whereas legitimately, I think the comparison for KJ Lacy is Bryce Young. I really do believe that. So that, you know, what do you like better? I think both of their upsides, NFL. So where they end up is going to depend on how well they play in college, how well they adapt to the college system, and the speed of the game. I don't know that either of them have better. I think they're both NFL future guys. So, you know, and I don't know that either of them, and I will say this, I don't know that either of them are 1-1 picks as quarterbacks either.
Yeah.
I would add that. So, I think that they're both extraordinarily talented, and they just have different skill sets right now.
Oh, no, good stuff there. Yeah, and CJ, I love what you said about you say KJ has kind of an underrated ability to throw on the run, that he's really good on the run. I won't say that's one of the underrated. I've been, you know, watching a lot of Quinn. One of Quinn's underrated abilities is outside of the pocket, just kind of throwing outside of the pocket. I don't think we appreciate that enough. And then we recently talked about that with Dia Bell as well as one of his elite traits as a quarterback. I don't know, maybe something about Sark's evaluation of quarterbacks, something that he likes. Guys who, once they're outside the pocket, they still can maintain that high level of accuracy.
Yeah, The thing I'd add to that is, you know, maybe not so much out of the pocket, but on off platform or in weird kind of throwing positions. We've talked about Quinn's arm and how that kind of pushed him to being that number one overall prospect a couple of years ago. Arch Manning, what was his biggest play a year ago? That was rolling out to his right and hitting Jonte Cook on kind of a throwback across the field for a catch and run after that. And then we saw it in the spring game as well. The big play for Trey Owens wasn't necessarily eluding defenders outside of the pocket and kind of getting outside of the tackles, but more so climbing up and making a throw like a shortstop across the field where he hit a guy in stride straight to the end zone. So I think that is exactly what you like about Sarkisian's evaluation of quarterbacks is, yeah, it's all good and well when the pocket's clean and you're able to hit your back foot and deliver a strike. But when you do feel pressure, are you still able to get the ball where it's supposed to go accurately and not put it in harm's way? And so far for the three quarterbacks Texas has on campus and the guys that we're seeing them recruit behind the scenes, they all have that common trait, and I'm a huge fan of that.
Good stuff, CJ. All right, next question here. Daniel. Daniel wants to know from Bobby. Bobby, is the philosophy still if Texas takes a guy outside Texas, he's a potential first rounder? Oh, that if you're going to go outside the state, that it's got to be a big fish, one of those? Is that still
I think there's an element of that. I don't think it's going to be the case with every single player they take. Like right now, I'll be honest with you, the state of Texas is not producing enough interior defensive linemen. So as of right now, Texas is really going after one interior defensive lineman in the state of Texas, and that's Zion Williams out of Lufkin. Now, they're monitoring a couple guys, Rod, but they're not really pushing for them at this time. And so that means that they're not finding enough in Texas to fit what they want to do. Now, a lot of the guys are in that category, in my opinion. They are guys that you want to see go early in a draft, whether it's Josiah Sharma is a defensive lineman out of Folsom, California, for example, that's coming in a couple weeks. He's in that category. Jamie French, the wide receiver out of Jacksonville, Florida, is in that category. There's a number of those guys. I don't know that it's necessarily first round as much as it is NFL caliber dude. And I think that's more what Steve Sarkisian is looking like right now. He don't want to recruit anybody that he can't see playing in the NFL. Now, doesn't mean every one of them is going to do it. Rod, you've been there. I mean, you've seen NFL caliber guys not do it because they just didn't get after it. But I think that's the bigger piece. It's not so much first round guys as it is he wants guys that he thinks have NFL talent across the board.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. You can tell by kind of the roster construction from Sark. He wants to stack it with NFL talent. No doubt about that. All right, thank you guys for the questions. But we're going to have Bobby tell you a little bit about our sponsor here in just a second, Texas Electricity Ratings. But just ponder this question. I got a couple of questions for you guys. Ponder this question. What position group do you guys think will have the toughest time transitioning into the ecosystem of the SEC, period, for Texas? For the way the roster is constructed now, you know, what lies ahead in the SEC? Just think about what position group overall do you think may have the toughest transition going into the SEC? I want to ask you guys about that. But before we do that, I'll have Bobby tell you about our good friends for supporting us at Texas Electricity Ratings.
Yeah, absolutely. For those of y'all living in the state of Texas and in the major cities with deregulated electricity like Dallas and Houston, you understand that the deregulated electricity market can be confusing. Texas Electricity Ratings is a shopping website that lets you compare prices, read customer reviews, and find a good electricity plan that fits your needs. It also filters out a lot of the gimmicky plans on websites like Power to Choose that trick customers into expensive bills. So if you're in the market for a new electricity plan, shop TexasElectricityRatings.com/OTF for all of your electricity needs. Hook them from the guys over at Texas Electricity Ratings. Rod, your question about which position group has the most ramp up in the ecosystem, I don't think there's any question it's defensive tackle. And that's why Steve Sarkisian went out like he did in the portal and signed three. The offensive linemen are bigger in the SEC than they are in the Big 12.
Yeah.
Across the board. Bigger guys. And outside of Oklahoma, I don't know that there's been a great offensive line in the Big 12 in decades. Just going to put that in since Texas had one probably in 2006, 2007, that or 2008, that time frame. So I think that the defensive tackle group, given that they lost who they lost over the last 2 years, not just this past year, but the prior year too, with Keandre Coburn and Moro Ojomo, I think defensive tackle is the one that has to come correct in the SEC. And that's why I think that's why Sark went out and did what he did in the portal too.
Yeah, I think that's a obvious spot to look, no doubt about it. And clearly why it was addressed as heavily as it was. I was going to go on the interior offensive line, you know, your guards and center. I think we'll be going against a little bit of a different mold of defensive tackles in the SEC. Texas has played some good ones, but I wouldn't say they've played the difference makers like what we've seen, like a Jalen Carter, some of those big guys from Georgia. You know, Alabama gave Texas a good run. They'll be facing a good test early on against Michigan. But that consistent week in, week out will be a little bit different than what I think you saw from some Iowa States, some Kansas States, you know, some Kansases. It's going to be a little bit different there. Luckily, Texas returns its top five interior guys, whether that be Jake Majors, DJ Campbell, and then the three guys battling it out again for left guard, Cole Hudson, Nato Omiozulu, and Hayden Connor. You have a lot of depth there, but I think you're going to be going against a little bit different of a type of guy week to week to week. As to your point earlier, Bobby, luckily this group has faced four straight NFL caliber guys over the last two years, where I think it might not be as much of a move as we could have expected earlier. But hey, I think as those games go on in the year, you might be looking at a little bit more wear and tear as a result of the competition you face.
I have no problem with that answer. I do too, because it's guard to guard. That's what we're talking, both sides of the ball, right? Guard to guard. Yes. Different type of humans. Different type of humans. What was the first thing Steve Sarkisian said? We need to get big humans. Right? That's what he said when he got in. And it's because that's what wins in the SEC. And that's where the best brand of ball is played. And so I think that makes sense. What did you have, Rod? I'm curious to see if you had a slightly different take of it on it or something else you were thinking about.
No, both of those were in my top three. I also put down linebacker. Just because of the style of play and the physicality with the run game gets ratcheted up to a higher level. And then you just have the athletes in the passing game, the skilled athletes. I would say the Big 12 probably has more speed overall at skill positions than even the SEC. But the SEC, combination of speed and power with those athletes at tight end and at wide receiver, they're built different. Like the wide receivers from LSU, those wide receivers from Alabama, the Georgia tight ends, they're built different than the skill position guys in the Big 12. So that linebacker position, which is just it's become in the RPO world, it's just become a tougher and tougher position to navigate. I mean, those guys are operating in a quantum realm half the damn time. And I think in the SEC, it intensifies even more. So that, I think both you guys were on the money. I throw linebacker in there as another position. Difficult to translate. I'll flip it too. What position is the easiest translation into the SEC for Texas? The way everything is. What position you think they'll go to the SEC? And hell, it could even be they could be just as productive, if not more productive, going into the SEC. Is there a position?
Safety. Safety. Okay. Yeah, and the reason why is that I don't think the SEC throws the ball around quite as much and doesn't stress the safeties. You're not going to see five wides 1 week and two wides the next.
That's
good. And that can stress a safety more than it stresses. I mean, the cornerbacks they're going to be put on an island 25% of the time regardless, right? Safeties getting mismatched is a little bit different and more likely when you're playing 3-4 wide receiver sets all the time. And the SEC does not run a lot of four wide receiver sets. That's my take on that. Like look, not everybody has to run. In the SEC, we've become so we've become conditioned to run a 4-2-5. I mean, nickel is your base defense in the in the Big 12.
Everywhere now, period. I think you're right. NFL teams,
they do it in the SEC too. But if you don't have the big package, you're in trouble. In the Big 12, I think you can get away without having the big package. You know what I mean by that, Rod? Yeah,
you're right about that. I agree with you. And I think you're right about the safeties being more stressed in the Big 12 culture or ecosystem because of the influences of the air raid and more pace and space or a spread-oriented offenses, period. And they're hybrid spreads. They switch it up on you. They're different types of spreads, as you mentioned. They're not all the same. So I'm with you. I think the life of a safety actually may be a little bit easier is scheme-wise, matchup-wise in the SEC. It's interesting. I like that.
Yeah, maybe not easier, but less stressful.
Exactly. It's simpler.
Yes, simpler. That's a better way. That's a better way to put it.
Still got to match up with great athletes, better athletes, actually. But at least the schemes won't be as sophisticated in terms of how they're trying to manipulate you as a safety. I agree with that.
Hey, Rod, he's got Jerry just published it. Just so everybody understands it. Dallas Wilson, a wide receiver out of Tampa Bay Tech, who's committed to Oregon, will be on Texas's campus tomorrow for an unofficial visit. That's okay. Dallas Wilson out of Tampa Bay Tech. He is one of the top 50 players in the country. I'm looking at the 24/7 Sports composite. He's a number 5 wide receiver overall in the country.
Hey,
and so everybody thinking, oh, they're going to go after these three receivers.
Big fish, huh?
Trying to tell folks, wait a minute. There's a guy like Kelshon Johnson out there. There's other guys that are still recruiting, like Marcus Harris out of Modern Day. Well, add another one. Dallas Wilson, 6'3", 195 out of Tampa Bay Tech, committed to Oregon currently, but has offers from Miami, Florida State, Florida, Georgia, et cetera. He's expected to be on campus tomorrow, according to Jerry Hamilton.
Man, he can go. You know, that big body, we don't see that all too often with Texas. I know they're after Khalid Lockett right now. Jamie French, a little bit sneaky tall as well, but about 6'3", 6'3 and a quarter, was part of Tampa Bay Tech's 4x1 that ended up qualifying for Florida State. So that's pretty good if you're qualifying for any part of the Florida track state championships. No doubt about that. Oregon's doing a great job, but he's going through the process, kind of evaluating some schools. Texas stopped by earlier this spring as well. So you get an idea that, hey, even though he might not be a part of the Big Three, even with Kelshon Johnson that we've mentioned in the past, Texas is evaluating through the whistle and certainly starting to recruit as well.
Yeah, committed to Oregon, also being recruited not only by Chris Jackson, the wide receivers coach, but Jeff Banks went down there to see him. I think Tashard Choice went by to see him as well. So I'm putting it out there for everybody to know, this another guy that Texas is going to throw their hat in the ring with, the top 25 player in the country. So he shows up on campus. He's expected to show up on campus tomorrow.
Man, he can. He got some wheels on him too. He's guys who are that kind of size. They usually lumber, right? They lumber a little bit. He does not have any hitches in his giddy up, man. That dude can fly. He's
6'2", 6'2½, 6'3", 200. Sounds a hell of a lot like Ryan Wingo.
Mm-hmm. Ooh. You're right about that. Because like I said, the rare combination of that kind of size with that type of explosivity and kind of acceleration, you just don't really see. Yeah, that's interesting. I like it. So you say, how many receivers are they actively recruiting then?
At least six. They're actively recruiting. Right. We think they want 3 or 4.
Okay. Nice. I like him though. I gotta go watch all. I haven't watched all of them. I remember I trust Jerry Hamilton because Jerry Hamilton's the guy that first ranked Rod B on any damn list. So I trust the man. And he said that DeCorian Moore is what he said, Jerry. I think you were there, Bobby. He said the recruitment is on the level of a Derrick Johnson and
Adrian Peterson.
Yes. And that, think about that. They're kind of impact players those guys are. Those are generational talents. And that's what he's saying about DeCorian Moore. That's That to me means that's the guy you gotta get. You gotta get that dude. If that's what kind of player he is, you gotta get that dude. Are we saying he's at the top and then Dallas?
No. So Dallas Wilson's one of them, but DeCorian Moore. I see what you're saying. Is DeCorian Moore at the top? I think he's the top of everybody's board.
Okay, so, there you go.
I mean, everybody's.
And then what is his slot? What is Dallas Wilson's slot now? Is he?
He's a top five receiver in the country, Rob.
I mean, although among the guys Texas is recruiting, though.
Oh, I don't know. I don't know yet. And I don't think we know who number two or even number three is. I think that's the whole problem. Part of it is people want to assume Texas is all in on these three wide receivers, Kalik Lockett, out of the Dallas area, and Jamie French out of Jacksonville, Florida. The whole talk the last 2 weeks is, can Texas sign all three of these guys? I mean, there have been guys that have done videos on it. And the reality of it is they ain't done. They're still – that's not how Sark rolls. They ain't done, they're not done in early June when it comes to receivers. Not when he's trying to recruit, you know, first round. I mean, now, I will tell you this. They want first-round picks at wide receiver right now. He is being very greedy at wide receiver.
That's the Arch Manning effect. When you got Arch Manning back there, it makes it easier to recruit the receivers, man. Makes it easier to recruit
them. Yeah. Dude, that right there is unfair. Crossing around with that dude.
What were you going to say, CJ? Sorry, I might have interrupted you. What were you going to say?
No, I was going to – remember that conversation we had, I believe, Sunday night about guys that commit maybe a little too early, and then they start going out and they start taking a little bit more visits. And, you know, I know they're still plugged into their commitment and they're still holding a spot in that class, but maybe they just want to see what else is out there. Well, he committed to Oregon January 17th of 2023. So it's been almost a year and a half since he made that commitment. And now, as we mentioned, kind of seeing a top five status for himself in the world of current 2025 recruiting, it would make sense to want to at least evaluate or at least visit each school that's been pursuing him, because for a while, I'm sure he kind of shelved that idea. So this is another opportunity where, whether it works against Texas, it's potentially working for Texas in this one.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. All right, so good job, Jerry Hamilton, breaking the news as always. That's why you should always stay plugged into On Texas Football. Become an OTF OG as well. You can get all the tidbits and all the nuggets there from the crew. All right, let's get back to some of the conversation. Actually, here's one related to the conversation we were having from Brandon. Brandon Ralston wants to know, this seems like overkill at wide receiver, does it not? Am I tripping? I don't know if it's overkill at wide receiver. I mean, I think Sark wants to start the pipeline where guys are going to the NFL and he's losing a receiver or two every year to the league. And then there are two leaving via the transfer portal, just because that's just the life you live. And I think, is that what he's trying to balance? Am I right about that?
I think he'd love to have the same problem Ohio State's had.
Yep.
Amen.
That's what he sees with his offense. So he's not, you know, I don't know if it's overkill. Has it been overkill at Ohio State? Was it overkill last year when LSU had two guys in the top 10 or whatever they ended up with? Mm-hmm. I don't think Sark thinks of it that way. I think he thinks of it. This recruiting is unfair. It's not the NFL draft.
You can stockpile them, maybe.
Yeah. Yep. You know, and so I don't think he sees it as overkill at all. I think he says, come to Papa. I think that's what he says. Come hang out with me. You know, I'll get you the football the way you need to get the football. That's how I see it.
Here's an idea. Bobby, I wanted to get your thoughts. Rod, this I think is right down your alley as well. But we've talked about it on the winning drive a little bit in terms of what's the second most important position with some of these contracts in the NFL. And we've pointed to interior defensive line with Tavondre Sweat and Byron Murphy now going as early as they did. Some of these wide receiver contracts are pretty ridiculous. You know, we just saw Justin Jefferson ink the richest NFL contract to a non-quarterback in the history of the game. Now it looks like CeeDee Lamb is going to follow suit. He's coming up for a big payday as well. I think this is not a position you want to play around with, specifically with the offensive style that Sarkisian plays and coaches for. It's looking to me like wide receivers starting to become a little bit more widely known as unique game changers there, more so than just about anywhere else on the field.
How many went in the first round, Rod?
No, that's you're right about that. Yeah. I mean, the crazy thing about wide receiver is, and we'll get back to it, but you hit the nail on the head there, CJ. I was talking about this actually on my morning show because Justin Jefferson just got that deal, right? So he's making a $35 million a year at wide receiver. 5 years ago, guys, you had five wide receivers in the NFL making at least $20 million a year. Now you have over 21 of them, I think, making $20+ million a year. And the top of that food chain is $35 million. So usually what increases the value of a position is the rarity of it. It's tough, right? Look at a quarterback. How many guys can play quarterback? Not many on this planet. So, yeah, the quarterback position increases in value. It's really important. Look at D-tackle, how tough it is to find guys with that kind of mass that can be agile enough to rush the passer but also be a run stuffer, right? It's tough. That's why that's becoming a premium position. Hard to find those types of human beings, right? You just said it, Bobby. Texas, there's not enough even in the state of Texas. Texas got to go outside the state, this big-ass state, to find D-tackle somewhere else, right? So, but the thing about wide receiver is it's the deepest position in football at any level. Like, look at Texas is doing it in the transfer portal. You can go to Central High School football games, Central Texas High School football games right now, and some really good programs, and they see, like, they got three good wide receivers there that can play D3 ball, and one can play D1 ball, that kind of thing. So it's the deepest position in football at any level. They're, as you pointed out, Bobby, they're drafting them higher than they've ever drafted wide receivers before. I believe in the last 4 years, that's been an average of over 10 wide receivers, damn near 11 wide receivers taken in the first two rounds. Like, that's just the average. So they're taking more wide receivers in the first round. They're paying them more than they've ever paid them, and they're more productive earlier than they've ever been in the NFL. I believe the last 4 years, you've had 15 wide receivers have at least 100 targets. In the 3 years prior to that, it was just one rookie wide receiver to have at least 100 targets. So we're talking about rookie wide receivers. So they're more productive than they've ever been early on. They're drafting them higher, and they're paying them more. Like, something doesn't add up. Like, it's going to be a market disruption at one point. So you've seen a couple of NFL teams, they decide to trade their number one wide receiver, like the Titans, like the Packers with Devonta Adams, like the Chiefs with Tyreek Hill. But you're right. And I think it relates to all, goes all the way back to the high school level. When we talked to the Bam Performance about this, who's the wide receiver coach we talked to, Bobby, about it? How the best athletes now at the high school level, they want to play offense. They'd
more rather play margin offense. Hooks. Margin hooks up and down.
He said, man, we can't get them to want to play defense. They all want to play offense. I'm telling them, Mikey, you could be a first or second round pick playing defense. They're like, nah, I want to go play offense. They want to score touchdowns. It's fantasy football. Nick Saban even said Trevon Diggs cried when he moved into DB. The GOAT told you you're a great DB, and he cried because he wanted to play offense. So the psychology, I think now you're starting to see the separation, guys, where the more and more talent, period, especially at wide receiver and skill positions, is on the offense side of the ball, because early on now, for the last decade, kids have been wanting to play more and more offense. Hard to get guys to want to play defense. So you're right, CJ. It's a separation happening. I think you can observe it from the combine to the pay scale in the NFL.
Yeah, absolutely. I love that Ed Blake comment. I'm going to start throwing to my sons. Absolutely. Either yeah. that or go. Go teach them how to dribble between their legs really young, get a corner three going. You see some of those contracts. My goodness, Christian McCaffrey just signed for 19 a mil. He's making, what, Tim Hardaway money.
Yeah, but you're right. That's because he can catch. They're not paying him because he can run the football. They don't give a damn about running backs anymore. They're paying him so he can catch. Crazy stuff going on. All right, a football junkie, thank you very much for the super chat. Really appreciate it. Football junkie says, SEC teams play with three linebackers a lot. Would that push Texas nickel defender off the field? Also, wouldn't you want Hill outside in those sets? That is interesting. Yeah, I mean, there's some way more spread teams still in the SEC now just because of modern football. But you're right. There are some teams that can just line up in power sets against you. You're going to see it versus Michigan, actually, even early on. Them line up in some power sets with either an H-back in the backfield or 12 personnel, one back, two tight ends. So you're right about football junkie. It's definitely going to be more than the Big 12. You're going to have your fair share of teams that are going to spread you out, but you'll be having more 40, what they call 40 personnel. That's just when you just have four DBs on the field, and you can have three or four linebackers, or, you know, obviously seven defenders in the front seven, and then you'll have your four DBs. That is what Texas may be in at times when they play teams who want to go power football. Kentucky can do it, I think, probably really well. I think Georgia could do it if they wanted to do it. They have that possibility, and they'll probably do it from 12 personnel because they got so many really good tight ends. We know Harbaugh, the way he constructed his damn team in Michigan, they want to play bully ball, so they got tight ends to do it. They got four backs that can do it. So there's going to be three games this year where I'm actually concerned about Texas matching up with them bully ball teams that want to run power at them, and that's Michigan, that's Georgia, and that's Kentucky. Everybody else, they still have mostly spread concepts they're bringing to the table. Those three teams, I think, guys can line up, and they can play bully ball against you. And if you're right about Hill, that's a great question. Even with your edge defenders, do you want to take Hill off the field? I think he's always going to be on the field either way. I mean, whether they want to put him at linebacker or whether they put him on the edge there, he's one of those guys that's not going – I mean, he's always going to be there. I think you would probably keep him at linebacker because you're so deep on the edge position right now. I would like to put him there situationally in passing downs. But in run situations, and this is going to be a test for him, I think I'd have him there at linebacker right now. He is probably your best line. That probably is your best linebacker.
Yeah, definitely you're going to keep Anthony Hill in the middle of your field just because of the speed that he provides. What you will see is Mo Blackwell coming in at that Sam backer, taking the nickel off and just going bigger in those Kentucky, maybe A&M, Michigan games. There was a reason why he gained 15 pounds this offseason, right? He's about up to about 225 pounds at the moment. We'll see where he is when the roster updates again. But he was noticeably larger than where he was at the end of the spring, a few months ago. So really encouraging that front, because again, in the SEC, you're going to need those three linebacker sets at times. We know what he can do in space. He was a converted safety from his high school days, made the jump to linebacker. Now he's got some of that SEC size, if you will, with two other starting linebackers pushing 240, might I add, with David Benda and Anthony Hill. So Texas is going to have the size there. Will they have enough depth at the linebacker spot to be able to sustain an entire SEC season? That might be a little bit more of the question, but as a result, at least you know right now that your baseline starters, when you go jumbo, are certainly going to have the size adequate enough to play in the SEC.
Yep, and they should make sure they move. This thing about, remember they did this, that when they went 40 personnel last year, sometimes they would take Jadae Barron off the field. And it nothing upset me more and grinded my gears more than taking your best player off the field in 40. If I was going up against Texas, I just made sure they were in 40 personnel the entire time just to not have to worry about Jadae Barron. But I think they corrected that toward the end of the year. That's something I hope they do too. I mean, you want to just have your best 11 on the field in that situation. So when you have your three linebackers, you know, you would like to have still Jadae Barron out at the corner from the nickel or help move him back to safety, whatever you decide to do. Don't take that guy off the field. Good question there, Football Junkie. Appreciate the super chat as well. All right, let's continue our discussion. Cisco Diaz, this is kind of a throwback to our conversation earlier about what positions will have the toughest transition from the ecosystem of the Big 12 to the SEC. He says, running back. My reason is they may not always have the holes they might have been used to in the Big 12. That is thinking outside the box. I like it, honestly. I do. I like that. Because that kind of goes to what you guys both brought up, interior line play. I mean, the guts of the defense, interior line play. So, yeah, that in some of those interior runs especially, I could see, you know, the running backs maybe have a tougher time. Maybe those slivers of daylight are a little bit smaller. Maybe they have to – maybe the vision for the running backs has to be a little bit more precise. The footwork's got to be a little bit more precise because your margin for error shrinks when you go into a line of scrimmage league like the SEC. Good answer there, Cisco. I like that. Good stuff. Yeah. All right, continuing here. Oh, got another super chat. Oh, we got a couple here we got to get to. Jay Tump, thank you very much, Jay Tump 247 for the super chat. Really appreciate it. Says, are y'all going to be at the big man lineman camp this weekend? Big man lineman camp this weekend? And who's cooking for that group? Casey Stutter? What's going on?
I don't know that we're going to be there because we're going to be busy covering the Longhorns weekend of official visits. CJ, y'all have any plans of being at that camp?
Yeah, I'll make the trip out there, see what's going on. Of course, Texas was expecting a 2025 visitor. It looks like he'll be visiting elsewhere, but with the way that Texas has been recruiting and the way that these 26 and 27s have been a little bit more inclined to visit Texas early on compared to some of these previous cycles because of their most recent success. I wouldn't be surprised if you see a name or two pop up that you weren't expecting at this big man camp. So I'll make the trip out there just to see what might arise. And, of course, we'll have the updates here at OnTexasFootball.com.
Hey, CJ's always working hard, and I'm telling y'all, it ain't many people out there working as hard as my man CJ Vogel. He's a beast. All right, another super chat here from Sean. Sean, thank you very much for the super chat. Really appreciate it. God bless. And shout out to the UT women's rowing team for winning the Natty and the softball team for making it to the national championship game. Thank you very much, Sean. And could you have scripted it better? You couldn't have scripted the softball championship series any better, right, gentlemen? You got a Red River rivalry that is basically going to end basically on their way out of the Big 12. Both teams, they're the middle finger on the farewell tour out of the Big 12 for softball. And then they get to sell it, Texas versus Oklahoma. It don't get better than that. I ain't going to lie. I'm excited. And the ladies of Oklahoma, which is a powerhouse blue blood program in softball and a dominant one. Texas already got a couple of wins over Oklahoma this year already. So you got confidence going into this matchup.
Yeah, what was the streak of consecutive Big 12 series that Oklahoma had won? Hadn't it gone back to about like 2016 or something like that? And Texas snapped it this year. So we'll see. I mean, they're going to be mad.
OU's been a juggernaut in softball. It's almost like Texas and men's swimming for like 10 years there, Rod. Where they were winning it every year. I will say this, part of the reason that everybody's interested in women's rowing and softball is that there's something called the Director's Cup.
Yes, sir.
That is all of the sports for a collegiate team combined into one point system, and then you emerge with a number one and number two, et cetera, athletic department across the country. We've got Dr. Brett Wilkerson, who publishes the Director Cup updates for us. He's coming on tomorrow morning at 8:30. It is thought right now that as long as men's track and field does okay this week, that Texas may just have won its third out of the last 4 years Director's Cups. But we're going to talk to Brett about it tomorrow to kind of get his final diagnosis of it before the actual results come to pass. But it looks like Texas could win three or four now.
How many had Texas won prior to this recent run? Zero. Okay.
Nobody had won.
Is it Stanford just had dominated?
Stanford, because they played so many sports. So many sports. 37. Yeah. I think that one time they had 37 sports, and they were so good at it. Mm-hmm. Stanford was like great at golf and tennis and sailing and rowing and all of those things where they would just rack up points. And now what they did about, I think, 7 or 8 years ago, they changed the Director's Cup. And we can ask Brett this tomorrow morning, to where it only took the top 20 sports. You had to include 4 or 5 sports.
Yeah.
Of which football and basketball, men's and women's had to be part of it, etc. Volleyball, I think, has to be part of it too. The major sports have to be part of it, and then there's only 20 total sports. And so Stanford still, though, if it weren't for Texas, they would have still been dominating. There's no doubt about it. They've got so many great programs outside of the major programs, you know.
Yeah. I don't know if I can think of a time prior to CDC coming to Texas where Texas fans even cared about the Director's Cup or even, you know, have discussions about it, talked about it. Now it is one of those points of pride for Longhorn fans. And like I said, it's a recent thing. It's like the last four or five years. But I'll give CDC credit because I think he's the one that started talking about it a lot. And then I was like, Director's Cup, why do we care about that? And now people are educated on it and what it is, and, you know.
Well, I think Texas fans, even though what 90% of the people on here watching us right now and listening on Twitter or listening via podcast, wherever, 90% of them are football fans first at the University of Texas. I mean, I'm not trying to take that away from anybody or say anything, but I think each of those people also appreciate the University of Texas being represented by excellence across the board. I mean, that resonates. I mean, you know, with a Texas fan, they want to be excellent across the board. And so I think that feeds into that part of being a Texas fan and what it's all about too. So I, you know, Del Conte's done a marvelous job hiring. Some of the people that were hired before him have upped their game. I mean, Angela Kelly in soccer has completely turned that program around. You know, I thought that she was on the cusp of being fired a few years ago. Mm-hmm. And now she's got that thing going. I mean, there's just a number of programs like that where I thought 5 years ago Texas was going to need to make a change. And now they're sitting pretty. I mean, maybe they make one or two changes this year. Mm-hmm. We'll wait and see what happens with baseball. Obviously, that's kind of something everybody's tracking right now with their peers. But the only change right now in the athletic department, Ryan Murphy left the women's golf as the women's golf coach, and they brought in Laura Iannello, who, oh, well, she just won the national championship at Arizona in 2018. So it's not like, you know, they're replacing good coaches with good coaches across these other sports.
And as you would expect, I mean, this means something to the athletic department, right? You walk into that north end zone, the Hall of Fame, and what's the first thing you see the minute you get in there? Well, it's a big shiny glass trophy called the Director's Cup that Texas has separated from some of those national championships or conference tournament trophies as well. So they put that one on display for everybody to see the minute that they walk in. It's a proud thing here in Austin. And, hey, credit again to this athletic departments and coaching staffs and teams for being in a position once again to return that trophy to Austin.
Well, yeah. Women's athletic department going, I mean, College World Series, Rod, to y'all's point, this is their chance for the third national championship for the women's athletic department. So they had rowing, they had volleyball. Softball would be next. Softball and volleyball are extremely hard sports to win national championships in. I mean, they are as heavily competed against as any. And, that would be something for the University of Texas, in my opinion.
Yeah, it's not just bragging rights about the best athletic department in the country. That Director's Cup is the hardware to prove it. I think that's what CDC likes about it. All right, we got some more questions I want to get to here from you guys, and I got a couple that I want to ask just to wrap things up. Justin has two questions. I'll answer the first one. We can throw the second one up as well. He says, weird question, but would we have matched up better with Michigan than Washington last year in the college football playoff? We discussed this, I believe, in detail. I felt like, yes, it would. I don't know if it would have been a better matchup, but I know Washington was a bad matchup because their strength, their sophisticated passing game with their elite wide receivers and a first-round quarterback and a first-round wide receiver, it was directly aimed at Texas's weakness, which was their pass defense and their lack of, you know, elite coverage ability. And so I think that ultimately made a bad matchup. Would have been a better matchup. That Michigan defense, listen, I don't know if I could have said it been a better match. That Michigan defense was just it's going to be nasty this year. Last year it was suffocating. So I don't know if it would have been a better matchup, but I definitely think that the Washington matchup had a strategic advantage, given that their strength was directly aimed at your weakness. That wouldn't necessarily have been the case against Michigan, but Michigan would have had some other advantages. There's no doubt. Starting with the defense.
Yeah. That's almost just poison, right? You know, do you want to be a little bit behind the eight ball defensively or offensively? And for that Texas-Washington game, I would have rather have had been in a shootout than in a game where my defense was praying and hoping and the game decided on a stop, where I think I'd rather have had the ball in Quinn Ewers' hand than not. And so Washington, despite their air raid, their downfield approach, and how that kind of singled out and targeted the Texas secondary, I'd still have preferred to have played Washington in that game than Michigan. Again, Michigan had, 13 kids drafted, 19 went to the combine. They had plenty of NFL talent across the board, specifically on defense, with some of their best players still returning for this year. So that, to me, is where I think Texas at least were able to put up, 31 points in that game. They were still, and probably should have had a little bit more if you count some of those fumbles. But I'd rather have played Washington in that game. It's still not a good matchup, don't get me wrong, but I think Washington allowed for a little bit more opportunity to win a football game. If you weren't playing your A game, then Michigan would have.
Yeah, I would disagree. I thought they matched up much better with Michigan, even though Michigan won the national championship. Michigan didn't have a quarterback that could get so hot that it was didn't matter what the hell you did on defense. That's and Texas already didn't have a pass rush, whereas I don't think it would have mattered if Texas would have had a pass rush against Michigan. You know, if they could have stopped the run, Michigan would have had problems, and Texas would have had been able to outscore them. Whereas I think Washington could outscore Texas. I mean, they had two drafted tackles, a drafted quarterback, and three drafted wide receivers. I absolutely think they matched up better against Michigan. I think it would have been a lower scoring game.
Yes.
Yeah. Defensive struggle over a shootout. No, I like it. I like both of those rationales. Like I said, it's either way. Yeah. Pick your poison with that one. Also, Justin wanted to know, what are the odds of a 7-12 seed in the college football playoff winning a national championship? He says, I love more games, but some games may be illusory. He said, winning three games is wild. That's a good question. I don't know how many lower seeded teams we'll see make a run to win the national title. I imagine, you know, it's depends on who that team is, right? Because an injury during the season and then a guy gets healthy at the end in a crucial position, that can end up swaying the way a season goes. Teams who have like a new coordinator or something like that early on, they could start slow, have some losses early, then get hot at the end of the season. The hot team theory. So I could see it happening pretty early. It just depends on the circumstance of the team.
Here's where teams 7-12 in this past year's final AP top 25 is Oregon, Missouri, Ole Miss, Ohio State, Arizona, and LSU. A lot of high flying offenses there.
Yeah.
Like a lot of teams that can stretch the field. Obviously, a Heisman winner at number 12. That would have been interesting against Oregon first round. But would that have sustained? You know, you hear all the time about the defenses winning championships, defenses that get you stops, whatever. That old saying is, are those teams good matchups for Michigan? Are they enough to get over the hump against Michigan? Would Georgia at 5 been enough to keep those guys from winning multiple games in the playoff as well? I think that's where some, I don't know. I think they're a little bit more too one-sided the further that you go down that list. Ole Miss couldn't stop a lick. Missouri against Ohio State couldn't move the ball for an entire game and won because they were on their fifth quarterback. So I think you're seeing a little bit less of a holistic overall team and more so a one-sided approach the further you get down that list, whereas Michigan, even Alabama to an extent, could at least give you 60 minutes of good football on both sides of the ball.
Good stuff. All right. Super chats. Robert wants to know. Robert Pope, thank you very much for the super chat. God bless you. What freshman will have an impact, maybe similar to Hill, Manny Muhammad, or Williams? He wants to know which freshman will have that kind of impact. I'll open the floor up to you guys first. CJ, what freshman will have that kind of impact?
I think first off, you have to look at Ryan Wingo, right? What we saw out of the spring game, what we heard throughout the entire spring. I know that's a crowded room. How consistently can he find the field? The issue with this incoming group of freshmen is, you know, Texas is pretty deep across the board, right? They just went out and added 10 pieces from the transfer portal, all of which have played Power 5 football before. Now you're looking at a little bit deeper of a room, whereas, hey, some of those guys, Anthony Hill, come out. You win a spot, Derek Williams, you win a spot. I don't know if there's many spots still left to win for some of these freshmen. It's all about how often can they be a part of that rotation. And right now, I didn't see anybody from that freshman class from this spring make as much of an impact early and often than I did from Ryan Wingo.
All right. I circled three guys and wrote Ryan Wingo. I think Jordan Washington, if one of them
gets tied in.
If either of Gunnar Helm or Amari Nyblack gets injured, I think his timing is going to be accelerated. Then I put Colin Simmons.
Yeah, that's the one I was thinking.
Behind the scenes, Texas is really, really excited there. Really, really excited. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Anthony Hill became a regular in the second half of the season, but saw spot duty early, right? Had a big game against Alabama.
Yeah.
But he wasn't a regular. You know what I mean? He was like the, you know, 20 plays a game, 15 plays a game. And then all of a sudden he came on. I don't know that Colin Simmons will ever start this year. I'll put it that way. Like Anthony Hill eventually started. I don't know that Ryan Wingo will eventually start like Anthony Hill eventually started. Okay. But I think those are the guys that I saw that I would circle heading into this. I think they're going to have enough at running back to not worry about Christian Clark or Jarrett Gibson. I don't think they're going to have a need on the offensive line unless there's injuries and Brandon Baker gets pushed up. I think they've got enough now to really let Alex January bake a little bit, you know, and get healthy and get not that he's not already healthy, but get more armor on him, like you like to say. And I think they've got enough in the secondary to not force those young guys into early situations.
I like that.
Those are the three.
Yep. No, that was a good list, Bobby. I like that. All right. Here is a super chat here from Brandon. Appreciate the super chat, Brandon. Thank you very much. Said, live here in Conway, Arkansas, and we're getting a Whataburger. Haven't had it in years. Also,
oh, yeah.
Thinking about going to the Fayetteville game this year. Scared. I love it. Scared. Just put it scared. We all feel you, man. Don't worry. There will be Longhorns there, brother. Trust me. There will be at some friendly confines, I'm sure. Hell, whoever knows. You may even have some On Texas Football folks there. What are your thoughts, gentlemen, about that? Yeah, my man Brandon says he's thinking about going to the game. Is that going to be – we know in terms of hostile environments, your rival being – going on the road to your rivals is going to be crazy. And we experienced that Sark's first year in Fayetteville. The Aggies aren't as – what's the word I'm looking for here, Bobby? They aren't as trashy as Arkansas fans. They're a little classier. Is that the word?
They're not as just downright scary.
Yes.
Aggies are just weird. That's my – I mean, I'm not trying to be mean.
I don't want to be mean.
We had a guy on from Saturday Down South this morning, Matt Hayes. Does a tremendous job. We had him on this morning. And I was going down the list. I had him – did a little speed thing with him, like who did he think the best fans were in the SEC? He chose Auburn, by the way. The best fans, like
okay,
all about their team, generally a reasonable way. He chose Auburn. Worst fans, he chose Florida, but you know he's from Florida, and I think he sees that a little sideways there. Best venue, he had LSU, and I asked him weirdest fans, and he said A&M. So the point I have there is that Arkansas, they take things personally. They have a lot of state pride, independent. They're a smaller state than Texas, and so they have a little bit of chip on their shoulder about that. You know, and so that I think that's part of it. Now, you know, we'll see.
They'll be the Texas Tech of the SEC for Texas.
Oh, good stuff. Good job. I like
that. Where I think that game is going to be significantly more noteworthy and a game that they get up for way more than Texas will. They'll acknowledge them, but I don't think it'll ever be as hostile in Austin for that game as it will be on the road there, where it'll probably be a red out or a white out or a blackout every time you play there. It'll be under the lights. It'll be a game in which basically the entire state stops what they're doing and either gets up to Fayetteville or tunes in. So that'll be that game each year if Texas isn't prepared for. I mean, you could see one slip away, even with what is expected to be a pretty, you know, sizable difference in talent.
You think SEC Commissioner Greg Sankey is going to say get up and say that the SEC runs through Fayetteville? Like Brett Yormark did.
Hey, yeah, you know what? Yeah, you're right. I forgot. I'm a Brett Yarbrough fan too, but that is a low moment for Brett Yarbrough on that one, no doubt. And I'll say this though too about the just kind of the Arkansas environment there and everything. I've been told by people who go, I haven't been there, so I'll just say this. But in some places you go as a fan, you got to watch your back. In other places, you don't have to watch your back. It's just a ruckus environment. I've been told you got to watch your back at times in Fayetteville. That's all. Yeah. It's a watch your back kind of environment. Don't just turn your back on folks talking trash to you. You know what I'm saying? There you go.
There might be a liquor bottle over your head.
There were some folks who said they had stuff thrown at them. Last time Texas was there, thrown right at their head. I got a lot of friends who was
the difference between Arkansas and Texas Tech fans, at least Arkansas fans will find their way home at the end of the night. Tech fans, I think they might just be scattered across lawns and streets by the when the morning comes rolling around. It's the same fan.
Oh, that's well done. Well said.
They go park the car at the Wiener Schnitzel in Lubbock and just sit there. get over there drunk.
All right. We do have one more super chat question we're going to get to. But I have my man Bobby first tell you about our fantastic sponsor for our Tuesday night live stream, Texas Electricity Ratings. Really appreciate them being part of the On Texas Football family. And Bobby's going to give you a bit of a word about how to do business with our friends at Texas Electricity Ratings.
Yeah, guys, anyone shopping for electricity in the deregulated areas of Texas, TexasElectricityRatings.com is the best place to find a great electricity plan for your household. For starters, it filters out the dangerous and gimmicky plans from providers that are all hat and no cattle when it comes to your monthly bill. You can shop by rate, but also by an average bill feature that actually takes into account your seasonal usage to give you a real number and not just a placeholder. So if you're looking for a new electricity plan this summer, check out TexasElectricityRatings.com/OTF, and you can find the best options available in your area. Hook them from the folks at TexasElectricityRatings.com.
Oh, thank you very much, TexasElectricityRatings.com. So the folks in the chat, though, about this Arkansas conversation, Brad says they will jump you. Steven says Arkansas will be the most hostile environment for Texas every time. They different. Yeah, so I'm saying listen, just make sure you watch your back, man, when you're going out of the Fayetteville. They ain't playing. I usually understand the rules of engagement. I won't go to places like Fayetteville because I don't even want to be pushed to that place where I feel like, hey, I want to defend myself or something. No, I'm good. But the Longhorns who do it, hey, man, I got your back. I'm glad y'all have the courage to do it. I do not. Let's get to the last super chat here from DMX Kobe 08. Bobby, thank you very much, DMX Kobe 08. We appreciate the super chat. Thank you very much. Last one of the night. Bobby, how can we get more 5 stars on defense?
Wow. I mean, that's, I love to know myself. I mean, I think if I knew, Steve Sarkisian would know, and we wouldn't be asking all that. I think it's partly, it's twofold. One is you just have to keep after it a little bit, right? I mean, and they did get two. They've got one in each of the last 2 years, right, with Anthony Hill and Colin Simmons. Mm-hmm. And so now can they keep going in that direction? You know, can they add a couple this year? And then all of a sudden it goes from being one a year to two and three a year. And then you're talking about a different perception. So it just takes time. And Sark came in fairness, with a offensive rep. He earned it, right? I mean, that same guy we were talking to, by the way, Rod, asked him who he thought the best teams he had seen in the SEC over his 20 plus years of covering it. No. He had two teams. 2019 LSU and 2020 Alabama. Well, who was the offensive coordinator of that 2020 Alabama team?
You're right.
I mean, Sark earned the MO as an offensive player or as an offensive coach. And that's why I think he had such success early in that side of the ball. Now he needs to translate it across the board. And he's done some of that, right? Mm-hmm. Hasn't got all the way there yet, but he's done some of it. Give him time to get his bearings, get his more street cred as a head coach than just as an offensive coach. And he started that process last year, in my opinion, by going to the college football playoffs.
And I'll add to that. I think he, because of what you mentioned, he makes an offensive guy. I think they started their roster construction with an emphasis on offense. Look at the O-line. Look at QB. Look at what they did at those positions offensively. JT Sanders, now he ain't playing defense. He's playing tight end. So I think there was an emphasis that, hey, man, I'm the offense. I'm a head coach. I'm the offensive guy. Give me my offensive guys first. I'll build this thing with the offense first, and then we'll construct the defense. And look at the defense, right? You had five DBs in this latest recruiting class. You just got Anthony Hill. Just got Colin Simmons, Derek Williams last year. So you are, it does seem like they are just getting around because they only have so many talent acquisition cycles, kind of just getting around to building up the defense. And I think they'll start getting more of those five stars. We'll see. I mean, that's what Bobby said this year. They're up in the ante a little bit. And they're going in on some of these big time five star recruits. So hopefully they'll cash in there. All right. Anything else?
Hey, Rod, before we go, I know you're going to close it out for us. I want to say this, just a reminder. If you just came in during the middle of it, Texas has going to get a visit, unofficial visit tomorrow from Dallas Wilson, a wide receiver out of Tampa Bay, Florida Tech High School. He's committed to Oregon. He's 6'2", 6'3". 195 pounds. He's one of the top 25 players in the country. Our Jerry Hamilton broke the news during this broadcast over on Texas Football. There's also been CJ and him have both been breaking news all day long on recruiting on Texas Football. Make sure you guys go over there and check it out. It's where you can get all your news there. And then also remember, we are going to have on in the morning Dr. Brett Wilkinson to talk about the Director Cup updates as well and where Texas sits right now. Heading into the softball championship game, which starts our series, which starts tomorrow.
That'll be Coffee and Football tomorrow, starting at 8 right here on Texas Football. We'll also have a Wednesday night live stream around 7:10, 7:15. So you won't be tuned in for that as well. CJ Vogue, got anything in closing for the people?
No, I mean, hey, we had a good show today. We'll be back again tomorrow night, Rod. I can't excited for it. And of course, leading up to this weekend of official visitors, looking forward to seeing what else breaks tomorrow. We'll be hitting the phones all night and into tomorrow morning, trying to get the most out of it for you guys at On Texas Football.
That's why you should be always tuned in to On Texas Football. Thanks to Matthew behind the scenes, always working hard for us, and we appreciate him. Thank you to TexasElectricityRatings.com. Thank you to my man Bobby. Thank you to CJ Vogel as well. And thank you to all of you guys out there for all the super chats. God bless you guys. We really appreciate the love and support and helping build this community here on Texas Football. Until next time, same time, same channel. Remember, hook 'em.
Hook 'em. Thanks, Rod.
Thanks, guys.